You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Kaylin Huffman Brower. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, June 6th, 2019.
It's still in the development phase at this point, but they are optimistic we might be able to have something put together as early as this fall.
Monroe County is considering a new pretrial diversion program. WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn speaks with Monroe County Prosecutor Erica Oliphant about the program, which could be in place as early as this fall, in today's featured report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents where they feel at home. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
Tomorrow is National Gun Violence Awareness Day. As WFHB's Graham Capito reports, hundreds of rallies across the country are scheduled, including here in downtown Bloomington, to protest gun violence.
Lit lanterns and orange-clad activists will be on the Monroe County Courthouse Square this weekend. Starting this Friday, the Indiana chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America will hold a vigil for victims of gun violence. Activists will be joined by Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton and Monroe County Commissioners. This weekend ceremony is part of a national call to action to highlight gun violence prevention efforts nationwide called Wear Orange Weekend. Rachel Guglielmo is the co-leader of the Indiana chapter of Moms Demand Action.
So in Bloomington, our mayor and our county commissioners are joining together to issue a proclamation recognizing the day as National Gun Violence Prevention Awareness Day and expressing the commitment of our city and county leaders to prevent gun violence, to do everything in their power to recognize the gravity of the gun violence epidemic in our country and to express their public commitment to taking action to combating that epidemic.
National Gun Violence Awareness Day takes place this Friday, June 7th. Across the country, hundreds of Wear Orange Weekend events are scheduled to draw attention to the thousands of gun violence victims every year. Guglielmo says this weekend will connect Bloomington with communities across the country in a day of remembrance.
We're very fortunate that our county commissioners have agreed to light up the county courthouse orange as a way of raising awareness about the day and raising awareness about gun violence in our country. Our courthouse will be lit up orange along with public buildings and monuments all over the country. So it sort of joins Bloomington to other communities and cities all over the country that are stepping up to take action to combat gun violence. And particularly moving and important in the wake of the latest mass shooting our country has experienced in Virginia Beach. I think it really hits home for city and county employees that this last shooting took place in a municipal building.
Guglielmo says that the color orange has been a part of the anti-gun violence campaign for years, ever since it was used to honor Hadiya Pendleton after she was shot and killed in 2013.
So orange is the color that was chosen by the high school classmates of a young woman who was shot and killed in random crossfire in Chicago a number of years ago. Her classmates wanted to honor her memory and to remember her birthday. And they chose to wear orange on that day because that's the color that hunters wear to protect themselves and to warn others not to shoot. Orange is also a vivid and a bright color, so it's eye-catching and it symbolizes life. That's why, you know, our Moms Demand Action chapters have taken the lead from these high school activists, and we all commemorate Hadiya's death and Hadiya's life and the lives of the more than 100 people who are shot and killed every day in the United States, and orange signifies our decision and our commitment to honor their lives and their deaths by taking action.
Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America is a part of the nonprofit Every Town for Gun Safety, a political group that advocates to reduce gun violence through education and activism.
We're part of the Every Town for Gun Safety Coalition, which also includes Mayors Against Illegal Guns, of which Mayor Hamilton is a member, and it also includes the National Survivors Network and a celebrity council. Celebrities like Julianne Moore have decided to use their celebrity to help us raise awareness about gun violence. We're active year-round. This is our national awareness-raising event, but we are active in Indiana and in every state in the country year-round to educate people about the facts on gun violence and policies and legislation that are effective in reducing gun violence. We're active in our state legislature every year. We're at this year-round.
Guglielmo says that the group will also be tabling at the Bloomington Farmers Market on June 8th and 9th at the Showers Plaza.
We'll be providing information about Moms Demand Action and how people can get involved. We want people to understand that all of us have a role to play and we're not helpless, that all of us can really play an important role in reducing gun violence. We provide information about Moms Demand Action. We'll also be providing information about all of our various programs, our public education programs, our legislative action. And we'll be providing people with an opportunity to take action right there by sending postcards to our legislators to ask them to support federal legislation that's pending right now. That would be an important way of addressing the gun violence epidemic. So right now there are a few bills before Congress, a background check bill and the Violence Against Women Act, that have been passed by the House but await action in the Senate. So we'll be writing to our senators to urge them to throw their support behind these two bills. I just really want to encourage people to stop by our table at the farmers market and at the handmade market on the square. One of the things that's really difficult for people at this point in time with shootings being so frequent is to feel helpless. And we're all about helping people feel empowered to be part of the solution to this problem that we're all confronting.
The Wear Orange lighting ceremony will take place on the Monroe County Courthouse lawn at 8 p.m. Friday. For WFHB, I'm Graham Capito.
The Indiana University Board of Trustees voted to increase tuition fees across all IU campuses yesterday. Trustees approved a proposal by IU President Michael McRobbie to increase tuition by 2.5% during their meeting at IUPUI's campus in Indianapolis. The 2.5% increase will be instituted over the next 2 years. 2.5% for in-state tuition at IU Bloomington translates to a $267 increase. Increases will also go into effect at IUPUI, whose in-state students will pay increases of $237. IU's satellite campuses will also increase tuition by $183. Out-of-state tuition will increase by 3% on IU Bloomington's campus over the next 2 years. IU's Board of Trustees previously approved a 1.4% increase to tuition for this school year, with regional campuses seeing an almost 2% increase. This year's tuition increases were originally meant to last through next school year.
The Bloomington Common Council members are asking for more details in a proposed change to city code outlining the city's process for handling sexual harassment allegations. City Clerk Nicole Bolden read the proposed ordinance in last night's City Council meeting.
It provides that anyone doing sanctioned work for the City of Bloomington who feels she or he has been discriminated against or harassed by a city employee has the right to bring that concern to the appropriate city official, who will investigate the concern promptly and take appropriate action. It also requires contractors covered by the city's affirmative action requirements to implement a harassment policy for their employees. These changes will help ensure that anyone doing work for the city will have at least one avenue of redress should she or he encounter possible discrimination or harassment at work.
Councilmember Jim Sims says the changes are a direct response to sexual harassment allegations made in March against former County Commissioner Amanda Barge.
We have some that say, yes, this is a reaction to some of the things that's happened. Others say not so much. I will tell you, this is a direct reaction to what's been happening in this community. And I think that we need to make sure that we cover loopholes so that there's a smoother transition should we have these allegations, this type of behavior.
Council members expressed concern about needing procedures that ensured objectivity, particularly with elected officials. Councilmember Steve Boland said the standard for removing an elected official, if needed, has to be high.
I would think we would, and again, I think a lot of people, a lot of elected officials would want to know that this complaint was filed against them and want to know what they could do to address it, because I think most, at least most elected officials in Bloomington are people of goodwill who would feel bad that someone felt this way about how they were treated and would want to make the situation better. Again, that's not
or
a guarantee
if they
in the
didn't,
future.
It still would be a way of putting it out in the public light
and let the public decide.
It
would end up like the recent issue with the county. There are other going public with these kind of things helps address it to some extent. At the end, the voters have the last say.
But it wouldn't necessarily be buried just because it was an elected official.
Not if I were involved, no.
Yeah.
It was Councilmember Chris Sturbaum asking Barbara McKinney, director of the city's Human Rights Commission, how a complaint about the city's human resources director would be handled.
I take to heart what people said that, you know, people who do not identify as one gender or the other of the generally accepted genders are more likely to be the victims of harassment. So I think that we do need to do that in this code and probably look at other parts of our code as well.
In addition to needing more detailed procedures, Council Members Isabel Piedmont-Smith said she'd like to see more inclusive language than references to he and she. Under the proposed code, contractors would be required to furnish the city with their own sexual harassment policy documents. Council Member Andy Ruff and Allison Chopra were the only members who didn't pass on the straw poll, a non-binding vote. The City Council will revisit and likely amend the proposed legislation in its next meeting next Wednesday. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Kaylin Huffman-Brower. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Niehoff. Slotograph Niehoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Niehoff, law for business, community, and life.
County officials are working together to reform the county's criminal justice system. County commissioners have hired two consulting groups to help with that effort. Commissioner Julie Thomas said yesterday the county also wants to hear from area residents who've had contact with Monroe County's criminal justice system. To that end, four community conversations have been scheduled for this month. The county's goal is not only to reduce the jail population, but to provide better services for those with mental health and substance abuse issues. Officials also hope to reduce recidivism. WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn talked with Monroe County Prosecuting Attorney Eric Oliphant about a diversion program she hopes will be part of the county's criminal justice reform effort.
Monroe County hired two consultants to help with a criminal justice reform initiative. Can you tell me what the goal of that reform effort is?
Sure. So the idea is that they are going to do a comprehensive review of our criminal justice system here in Monroe County, from the stage of arrest or citation all the way through the disposition of the cases. They're also going to consider resources that we have available in the community to see if there's a way to optimize how we are helping people to reduce the amount of folks who are sitting in our local county jail.
Many of those people have mental health or addiction issues. I understand that officials working in the criminal justice system in Monroe County have been in talks for some time about diversion programs. Have you been involved in those conversations?
I have. So I'm a member of the Monroe County Opioid Advisory Commission. It's a multidisciplinary team of folks that have been exploring the idea of a law enforcement assisted diversion program. It's still sort of in an infancy development stage, talks with various police agencies, and then also just talks about what sort of infrastructure we have to have in place before we can even get started. But I'm a little bit optimistic. Centerstone and Chief of Police Mike Dekoff are sort of exploring the option of creating a crisis diversion center. And that would be a less than 24-hour facility where folks could go, and if they're in a mental health or substance use crisis, like an immediate event, they can go there and through that be channeled into case management and services. And it would be in lieu of jail. So they would be taken to a crisis diversion center and not to jail, even though there may be a criminal offense that was associated with that behavior. It's still in the development phase at this point, but they are optimistic we might be able to have something put together as early as this fall. We're looking at other models, so King County, Washington, Fayetteville, North Carolina. These are places who have law enforcement-assisted diversion programs in place. And basically, they have a written memorandum of understanding between various stakeholders that certain crimes just will not be filed and prosecuted if someone goes to the crisis diversion center and agrees to meet up with their service provider within a certain amount of time.
Can you maybe give us an example of what kinds of infractions would not be filed or would not be pursued?
Sure. Well, I can tell you at least what other jurisdictions have done. It's a lot of public intoxication, criminal trespass, sort of those nuisance crimes that you sort of think about with folks that have mental illness or substance use. But it also sometimes includes somewhat bigger cases, like dealing in controlled substances when it's at a subsistence level and not for major profit. So we would really probably have to get together with stakeholders and decide which offenses we felt Monroe County was willing to divert.
And when you say stakeholders, who exactly would that be?
We would probably have to, well, it has to be probably a prosecutor and police, because those are going to be major players. I have to, you know, basically agree that I'm not going to prosecute if this happens. The police have to buy in, because if they aren't buying in, they're not going to bring people to the crisis diversion center. They're going to bring people to jail. We'll probably want to have a defense attorney on the team just to make sure, like a public defender, just to make sure that everything is above board and fair. We may also want to consider downtown stakeholders, people who are members of the community, maybe former offenders, such as like the Community Corrections Advisory Board has someone who has lived experience in community corrections. And I think that's a good idea to have someone like that involved in the conversation. Business owners downtown might want to be a part of the conversation. So
perhaps the county sheriff.
Yeah, exactly. The sheriff, IU, police department probably should be involved. There are so many agencies that bring people to jail that we'd have to have a pretty big law enforcement pool.
What are some of the obstacles to creating that kind of a diversion program?
You know, I think making sure that the community supports it, making sure that the police feel supported and buy into the program. If they aren't on board, they're not going to use it, and it's just going to be a resource that doesn't help the problem much. I know that Fayetteville, North Carolina, seems like they're doing really well with their program. They've reduced recidivism pretty significantly. I can't remember what their number is. I believe King County, 38% of the people that went through their law enforcement-assisted diversion program were not rearrested afterwards. And that's a pretty significant drop.
So the county has just announced that it's going to have four community conversations this month, June, on criminal justice reform, and they're particularly interested in hearing from people who have experience or have had contact with the county's criminal justice system. Will the diversion program be part of that conversation?
I think it could be. I believe the conversation is a bit more broad. It's sort of generally what should we be doing and providing for folks with mental health and substance use disorder that brings them into contact with the justice system. What sort of supports should we have? Should we have sanctions? What should they look like? And I think we're looking to hear from people who suffer from mental illness and substance use disorder, but also people who've been victimized by folks who suffer from those. People who are related to folks who are impacted with these issues, just a little bit of everyone so that we get a broad view of you know, how should we be handling these problems? I think that Monroe County is really willing to think outside the box. And I will say we are really lucky because we do have a lot of resources that a lot of communities don't have. Like we have a problem-solving court. We have four different problem-solving courts that handle mental health, drugs, drug treatment court, veterans treatment court, and a reentry court program. And, you know, not every county has that. We also have I have a prosecutor-led diversion program that will divert first-time offenders up through level six drug felonies. So we just have a lot going on. We've already kind of been doing, we have a pretrial release program where we're trying to let people out of jail pretrial so that they don't lose their housing, jobs, et cetera. So, you know, I think we really are more progressive than a lot of Indiana, but that doesn't mean that we aren't open to new ideas and seeing what we can do to continue to improve.
The consultants of the county hired Inclusivity Strategic Consulting, they've been asked particularly to look at gaps in the system in terms of delivering mental health and substance abuse. But you've been in the game for a while. Where are the gaps that you see in the criminal justice system and in taking care of those with mental health and addiction issues?
So I think that the idea of having a pre-arrest diversion program is a really good one because a lot of times the barriers are created by having an arrest and conviction history. So if we can get people treatment before they get to jail, I think that's a really important step that we can take that's going to minimize the number of people who come into contact with the system. You know, a lot of our problem-solving courts only really apply to people with felonies and a history, and that's by design. They're meant to be for people who are high risk, high need, and the research shows if you put people with less past into those programs, you're actually causing increased risk for recidivism. So we got to make sure we're using those appropriately. So I think sometimes we leave the folks out in the cold who are sort of between no charges and lots of charges. You know, we always need in the community more services, particularly psychiatric services. We have a lot of substance use disorder treatment providers in town. There's a big diversity of providers for that. But, you know, if you have someone who needs a psychiatrist, sometimes there can be a bit of a wait to get in there. So that's just like a local community resource that we need to try to build up and recruit for our community. You know, I think that this all overall, though, mental illness and substance use disorder is a problem that's probably not going to be solved solely by the criminal justice system. If we had a better healthcare system with on-demand treatment where people could be supported regardless of their income, I think we'd be in a lot better situation overall.
And that was WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn speaking with Monroe County Prosecutor Erica Oliphant about a proposed pretrial diversion program. It's part of the county's ongoing effort to lower jail populations by connecting offenders with support services.
You're listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, we asked you to describe a place in Bloomington that makes you feel at home.
So, Miller Showers Park, I like to go running around it on a pretty regular basis, and I just love seeing the wetlands and all the animals and the fact that it's totally getting more and more plants growing through it, all these water plants. And I remember when it was put in about, 15 years ago or something? And, they cleared out all the trees and people were like, but then they put in this wonderful wetland. And I've just been really enjoyed seeing it grow over the years. And it reminds me that I've lived here for a really long, to me at least, a long time. And Millishowers Park is a place that I really enjoy. It makes me feel like a Bloomingtonian.
Meeting people and discussing things going on in the city or things going on in the world. And it's the Bishop Bar on South Walnut Street here in Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, this is funny, but a place that makes me feel at home in Bloomington would be Kroger on the east side. Because it's just, I spend a lot of time there, grocery shopping and stuff, and it's just a really chill place. And I've been going there for so many years. Everybody else has changed, and I'm staying the same.
The place that makes me feel at home in Bloomington is the Rails to Trails, because I love to ride a bike.
Feel at home in Bloomington at the MAC Musical Arts Center, because I danced on that stage for over a decade. I played trombone on that stage for another decade, and it's where music and art come together. It's beautiful.
The first thing that comes to mind is Cedar Bluffs. Yeah, Cedar Bluffs is just kind of so beautiful, and it's Morgan County, or it's Monroe County, it's Southern Indiana. It just kind of has that feel like you almost hear music in the air when you're down there, you know. It's awesome. Years ago, we actually pitched a tent down there in the summer of 90 and slept on top of that bluff. And in the morning, somebody came by and said, hey, you can't camp here. But I've been going back ever since, all times of the year. Probably saw the biggest snake I've ever seen down there. And then what was one other thing? I have pictures on my flip phone from back in the day from down there. And it was just like one of those times where you're snapping pictures of your kids, but there's these just beams of sunlight streaking down across the picture in front of my kids' faces. So, yeah, I guess, you know, there's a lot of places I could think of, but Cedar Bluffs is, that's a homie spot.
I think I like BBC Lenny's. It's probably my place I feel most at home. I know everyone there. Or I know a lot of people there. Everyone's super friendly. The staff's really friendly.
The Project School, because it is my school, so I am there a lot, and it feels basically like my second home.
So I feel really at home at Lake Lemon because my friend has a canoe, and so sometimes we've gone canoeing. And also, on days like today when it's really hot, then you can go and have fun. And also, I really like the water. I'm a water person, so yeah.
I feel at home at Graduate downtown. I work there, but it's still a great place to spend time with coworkers and people who pass through. It's a good mix of people, and everyone is just so lovely. Even when they don't pay me, I still find myself there helping out people. All the time.
Awesome. Good morning. Glad I met you here. You happen to be at the place I enjoy on weekends, Bloom Foods. Breakfast out of the apartment and get to meet a lot of interesting people.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Graham Capito, Cade Young, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Voices in the Street was produced by Mallory Rickbile. Our engineer today is Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, this is Kaylin Huffman Brower.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.